ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Descendants of King Priyavrata, verse 11. Chadamsya kamasya chayasya kaman.
Chadamsya kamasya chayasya
kaman. Chadamsya kamasya chayasya kaman. Although King Gaya had no personal desire for sense gratification, all his desires were fulfilled by virtue of his performance of Vedic rituals. All the kings with whom Maharaj Gaya had to fight were forced to fight on religious principles. They were very satisfied with his fighting, and though would present all kinds of gifts to him, Similarly, all the Brahmanas in his kingdom were very satisfied with King Gaya's munificent charities. Consequently, the Brahmanas contributed a sixth of their pious activities for King Gaya's benefit in the next life. Please repeat. Although King Gaya had no personal desire for sense gratification, all his desires were fulfilled.
All his desires were fulfilled
by virtue of his performance of Vedic rituals.
By virtue of his performance of Vedic rituals.
All the kings with whom Maharaj Gaya had to fight were forced to fight on religious principles.
They were very satisfied
with his fighting. And
they would present all kinds of gifts to him.
Similarly,
all the Brahmanas in his kingdom
were very satisfied with King Gaya's
munificent
charities. Consequently,
the Brahmanas contributed
a sixth of their pious activities
for King Gaya's benefit in the next life.
Purport. As a Kshatriya or Emperor, Maharaj Gaya sometimes had to fight with subordinate kings to maintain his government. But the subordinate kings were not dissatisfied with him because they knew that he fought for religious principles. Consequently, they accepted their subordination and offered all kinds of gifts to him. Similarly, the Brahmanas who performed Vedic rituals were so satisfied with the king that they were readily agreed to part with the sixth of their pious activities for his benefit in the next life. Thus, the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas were all satisfied with Maharaj Gaya because of his proper administration. In other words, Maharaj Gaya satisfied the Kshatriya kings by his fighting and satisfied the Brahmanas by his charities. The Vaishyas were also encouraged by kind words and affectionate dealings, and due to Maharaj Gaya's constant sacrifices, Sudras were satisfied by sumptuous food and charity. In this way, Maharaj Gaya kept all the citizens very satisfied. When Brahmanas and saintly persons are honored, they part with their pious activities, giving them to those who honor them and render them service. Therefore, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.34, Tad Vidhi Pranipadena Pariprasnena Sevaya, one should try to approach a spiritual master submissively and render service unto him.
Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeyam Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sahagrajatam Sahagaragunatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sahagutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Mishcha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastuta Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishudhanu Vasute Devi Pranamami Vanchakarpa Karavyashya कृपा सिंधु पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So many chapters we have been hearing about Maharaj Bharat and his association or dealings with something got stuck in the neck.
What is it?
Yeah, I drank water. So we heard about Maharaj Bharat and his dealing with Maharaj Raugana. So in this chapter we are hearing about his descendants. So as the chapter mentions, the descendants of King Priyavrata. So we heard in the entire, until now, we have heard about Lord Brahma's descendants. Especially we have heard about Swayambhu Manu, and it is interesting, why only Swayambhu Manu? Lord Brahma had many descendants, many rishis, Chatuskumara Vaidya and other names. So, but we have heard about them a little bit, but mainly we are hearing about the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu. One of the reasons is mentioned because Swayambhu Manu is a pure devotee of the Lord. And he is fulfilling the desire of Lord Brahma as well as Lord himself to propagate the universe. So, in the first chapter of fourth canto, which titles the genealogical table of the daughters of Manu, we heard about three daughters of Manu: Devahuti, Prasuti, and Akhuti. In the last canto, third canto, half of the canto, later part of third canto was dedicated to Devahuti and his marriage to Kardama Muni and his daughters and Kapila Muni's instructions. So that was there. But in fourth canto, first chapter, basically, it was the genealogical tables, the the progeny from these three daughters, Devahuti, Akhuti, and Prasuti, and how they were married, how Devahuti was married to Kardama Muni, nine daughters were, and Lord Kapila was born, and how Akhuti married Ruchi. Say Ruchi and Dakshina and Yagna were born, who were the incarnation of Lord and Goddess. And these are again been spoken in fourth canto later on. And then Prasuti married Daksha, and that they had 16 daughters, of which we heard about Sati, how she married Lord Shiva, and that Daksha Yagna we heard. In fourth canto, basically we are hearing more about Uttanapada and his descendants. So he married Suruji and had a son Uttama, and he married Suniti and had Dhruva Maharaj, and his descendants Maharaj Anga, Vena, Prithu, Barishat, Prachitas, 10 Prachitas. So the entire fourth canto was dedicated to Uttanapada and his descendants then. And then in the fifth canto, we come back to Maharaj Priyavrata, because we have already heard about Uttanapada, Devahuti, Akhuti, Prasuti, and now at the beginning of 5th canto, Parikshit Maharaj asks question, how come Maharaj Priyavrata, who was elder, who renounced the kingdom, but again he has come back? It's like a renunciate. Usually when he is completely renounced and he has been, he was guided by Narad Muni, Narad Muni was a spiritual master, how come he came back into Grahastha Ashram? It's not seen usually, especially for a person like Priyavrata Maharaj, who was very staunch devotee. So Parikshit Maharaj asked this question to Sukhdev Goswami, and Sukhdev Goswami says yes, he came back because there was a need. He followed the orders of Swayambhu Manu and Lord Brahma, and there was a need because there was no qualified king, so he had to come back. So we heard about Priyavrata in this fifth canto. We are hearing about the dynasty or the progeny from Maharaj Priyavrata, how he had one daughter, Mushvasari, who married to Sukracharya and had daughter Devyani, whom we will hear later on in the ninth canto, and 10 sons, eldest of whom was Maharaj Agnidara. We heard about him, and then he had 9 sons, of which Maharaj Nabi was the eldest, and then we heard about Rishabdev, Bharat Maharaj, Rishabdev's instruction to 100 sons, of which Bharat Maharaj was the eldest, and then we are hearing about Bharat Maharaj in the until last chapter, and now in that lineage comes, after few generations comes Maharaj Gaya. So the interesting part of why it's talked again at Maharaj Gaya, this entire chapter is basically focusing on different kings in the lineage of Bharat Maharaj, and then stops predominantly at Maharaj Gaya and explains in more detail about Maharaj Gaya. Because Maharaj Gaya is none other than, it is mentioned Maharaj Gaya is an incarnation of Lord Himself. And He appeared to protect the universe. So from time to time Lord incarnates as His devotee and He propagates the, saves the universe. And we see Maharaj Gaya's pastime that we have heard until now is very similar to the pastime of Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj, we know, was born from the churning of the arms of King Vena. When King Vena was such a cruel king that the Brahmanas of that time cursed King Vena to die. And from churning his thighs, Nishada and all the other abominable creatures were born, and so they churned the arms of King Vena, and Maharaj Prithu and Archi were born. And they could understand that these were not ordinary personalities, this was Lord Himself incarnated as Maharaj Prithu. And we have heard about how when Maharaj Prithu was born, all the sages, all the rishis were glorifying Maharaj Prithu. And we see similar, everyone is glorifying. In this verse also we see the Brahmanas were happy with Maharaj Gaya. So that time everyone was glorifying Maharaj Prithu, and Prithu Maharaj stopped them. He said, I haven't even done anything. How can you glorify me? A person who is really glorious would not allow others to glorify him unnecessarily. So similarly, Maharaj Prithu stopped the Brahmanas and the sages to glorify him, and then he started to rule. At that point, he saw that the citizens were not happy because the Mother Earth was not producing enough of food grains. Immediately as he saw that, what did he do? He picked up his bow and arrow and tried to shoot aimed at Mother Earth. And Mother Earth, in the form of a cow, she tried to run away, and Maharaj Prithu chased Mother Earth. At that point, it is mentioned Maharaj Prithu was about to shoot an arrow, and Mother Earth pleaded for protection. And when Maharaj Prithu inquired, he just did not blindly shoot the arrow. He inquired what was the mistake, why Mother Earth was not producing grains. And Mother Earth mentioned that because of the people who are not pious, they are not doing their ritualistic religious sacrifices, they are very impious, and that is why she has stopped producing food grains, and she has kept it within herself. And Mother Earth mentioned one more thing, that you are a righteous king, you are incarnation of God, so when you milk me, you will need a proper person to milk me, you need a calf, because of whose affection I will naturally produce milk, and you will need a pot to fill the milk. So these three things are required. And we see in that pastime, Prithu Maharaj got Swayambhu Manu as the calf, and with his cupped hands he started to milk the cow. So and in that pastime again different people are mentioned who again milk the cow in a similar way and got different desires fulfilled. Some devatas got somras, and the demons got liquor, and so different things people imitated Maharaj Prithu and got from cow. So the point why I'm mentioning this pastime is, we see here when the people, the citizens are satisfied, especially the Brahmanas are satisfied, the Kshatriyas are satisfied, the Vaishyas are satisfied, and the Sudras are satisfied, as it is mentioned in this verse, the entire society flourishes. Mother Earth produces abundance of food grains, minerals, all the things required for the sustenance. As Srila Prabhupada mentions in many of the purports, there is no real scarcity on this earth. There is abundance. Mother Earth can produce in abundance, but it's just people are shellfish. And we hear this entire chapter is more of focusing on the leadership of Maharaj Gaya. How Maharaj Gaya was ruling so perfectly. Of course, we cannot even imagine to be in such a society, because we are talking about Satyuga, or maybe beginning of Treta Yuga at this point. Mainly this would be Satyuga, right? Because this is just the initial dynasties who are coming. So it is very difficult to think about a society because, of course, the time has its own influence and we cannot expect to the same level. But at least what Srila Prabhupada is trying to, or ISKCON is trying to bring out, is to have the class of Brahmanas. This is one of the principles of ISKCON, to have to develop, to bring the culture of Brahmana, to create the class of Brahmanas who can guide the Kshatriyas, who can guide the administrative class. So, here we see in the verse it is mentioned that although King Gaya had no personal desire for sense gratification, so this is the first quality of a leader, that he shouldn't have personal desire for sense gratification. As soon as there is a desire for sense gratification, one cannot be suitable. And we will hear some of the points that Bhishma Dev mentions to Yudhishthira Maharaj. He is giving a nice class on leadership, and there is a beautiful book by His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj on leadership, which is available in Vedavisa also, and where he quotes Bhishma Dev predominantly. He is saying how Bhishma Dev gave instructions on leadership to Yudhishthira Maharaj, how one should rule the kingdom. So it is mentioned, King Gaya had no personal desire for sense gratification. All his desires were fulfilled by virtue of his performance of Vedic rituals. And so this was the main focus of Maharaj Gaya, to engage everyone in Vedic rituals, to engage everyone in religious ritualistic activities, religious duties, to perform that religious duty. And when everyone is engaged in performing religious duties, their religious duties, automatically Mother Earth is satisfied, automatically the demigods are satisfied, and everything will be produced in abundance. So Maharaj Gaya was engaging everyone in dharma, and there are four pillars of dharma, as we know. The first one is austerity, cleanliness, compassion, and truthfulness. And as the age progresses, we see these four pillars of dharma were very intact in Satyuga, but as Treta Yuga comes, austerity goes away. And then as Dwapara Yuga comes, cleanliness goes away. And then when Kali Yuga comes, even compassion goes away. And the last pillar of dharma, which is truthfulness, we can see it's diminishing at its rapid pace. So people, we cannot even trust anyone by their words. There was a time when I remember just on the words, people used to sell their properties. And now, even after making a contract, people have to go to courts. Even everything, contract is done, everything is done, but people just turn away, and then there is a court case. So, but there was a time, if somebody has said, okay, I have sold this property for so and so price, even someone else comes with a double the price, they would not sell, I have given my word. That was, and this is not, I am talking about Satyuga or previous Yuga, this is just about 50 years ago. People were so righteous, people had, their word had the value. But today we see, in just 50 years, we have, and it's interesting, we are reading in 12th canto with Keshav Prabhu, the symptoms of Kali Yuga, 12th canto describes. And all this which is mentioned, even if we take Srila Prabhupada has given this, it wasn't there in the time of Srila Prabhupada. Even 50 years ago, these things weren't there, which we are seeing today manifesting and in before us. People are eating pills, people are just not looking after the servants, and the servant is not obedient to the master. So all these things are so much prevalent in today's time. So we can see how Srimad Bhagavatam is focusing or giving us the direction, what is going to happen. Then in the verse it is mentioned, all the kings were satisfied with his fighting and they would present all kinds of gifts to him. And so Maharaj Prithu was such a religious leader that even the kings whom he defeated, they were happy with him, because by being defeated by him, by taking, being in a subordinate position to him. We see in the Mahabharata, when Maharaj Pandu went on to fight with the neighboring kings, the Salya king, he became defeated by Maharaj Pandu and offered his sister in marriage. And so that is the dealing between the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas, when they become defeated, they don't become morose, or they don't have enmity towards the other person, especially if the king is religious or righteous. So they will offer him gifts, they will be happy by being defeated. So similarly here we see Maharaj Gaya was, of course, the incarnation of Lord. He was so pious that the Kshatriyas who were being defeated, they accepted his authority. And we know Yudhishthir Maharaj was crowned as emperor. Emperor means there is a level of king. So somebody is a king, it is good. But when somebody is emperor, the emperor is the kings of king, king of kings. So he is he's been given the authority to everyone, accepts his authority. So that is the kind of respect people or the kings give to an emperor. So as it is mentioned here, the Kshatriyas were happy with Maharaj Gaya. And then in the verse as it mentions, the Brahmanas contributed sixth of their pious activities for King Gaya's benefit in the next life. And this again comes in Mahabharata and in Manu Samhita, where Bhishmadev is quoting Manu Samhita. And it's mentioning that the Manu Samhita goes to give the formula for how the king and his subjects should relate with one another. The citizens should give king's treasury 1/5 of their animals. And so 1/5 of whatever stock you have, animal stock, you should give to the treasury of the king. 1/10 of their precious metals should be given to the king. 1/10 of their grains should be given to the king. The 1/4 of the merits arising from pious deeds. So 1/4 of the pious deeds have to be given to the king. And 1/6 of the impious results arising from sinful deeds. So if the king is not ruling religiously, then 1/6 of the impious credits also goes to the leader or the king. So we see many times the leaders are, especially those who are in the leader's position and they're not looking after their subordinates, they become, it is mentioned, they are killed or they go through different diseases. Even Srila Prabhupada once mentioned that I'm going through this disease because my disciples are not acting properly. They are still engaging in sinful activities, illicit activities. So a person who is a leader, if he is not guiding, of course, Srila Prabhupada, for Srila Prabhupada, it's just a pastime, it's a leela, it's not really to go through the suffering. But we see in the example, the leader has to take on 1/6 of the impious credits of his disciples or dependents. So as it is mentioned, again, further in the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes this point that Maharaj Gaya satisfied Kshatriya kings by his fighting, Brahmanas by charities, Vaishyas he encouraged with kind words. And in the past time it is mentioned that Vaishyas used to give tax happily. It's a tax time right now. Everyone's mind is just on one thing: how I can save tax, not give tax. How much can I save? How can I? The accountants are very busy these days trying to figure out how the tax can be saved. So this was not the condition at the time of Maharaj Gaya. People were happy to pay their taxes. Of course, Maharaj Gaya, as per the religious duties, he never used to exploit his dependents, which we see today. The taxes are going on increasing. There are at least 50 kind of taxes: land tax, GST. Name the taxes, right? So there are so many taxes the government is putting on people. But this was not the system in the Maharaj Gaya's time. So that is why people in those times were happy to pay their taxes. So Kshatriyas were satisfied, Brahmanas were being given enough charities, the Vaishyas were happy to pay the taxes, and Sudras were satisfied, looked after by sumptuous food and charity. So here we see Maharaj Gaya is setting the highest standard of, or the standard which should be followed. And there is a beautiful verse which comes under in the sixth canto, Dharmantu Shakshat Bhagavat Pranitam Navi Vidurisha Napi Deva. So it's only the Lord Himself comes and establishes the principles of religion. It's not possible for any ordinary person. So we see when the Lord appears, He sets the standards in the material world. We see recently we had Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, Lord Krishna appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and He has set the standard for this yuga. and he has initiated the Yuga Dharma. The standards are set for the people for this age. Of course, we cannot follow Maharaj Gaya. We cannot have qualified Brahmanas. We cannot satisfy the Kshatriyas. Right now, we see the wars. There are wars going on, being fought everywhere. Just because the Kshatriyas are not qualified. But when we see Lord appears from time to time, we follow the incarnation for that. Yuga Dharma, and when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, he set the standard. If everyone just becomes devotee, everyone just chants Hare Krishna and follows the four regulative principles and follows the standards set by the Acharyas, we can see that it will be peaceful, the society will be peaceful and there will be prosperity in the society. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj mentioned, there is nothing lacking in this world except for Krishna consciousness. So if everyone just follows Krishna consciousness, it will be a peaceful society. And there are some quotes from the book Leadership for an Age of Higher Consciousness by His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, where he quotes Bhishma Dev, and he's making the statement that the king makes the age. So it's not the age itself, but the king, leader, who makes the age, and which I felt was very important. If there is a pious leader, religious leader, who is ruling the society, then automatically that society becomes pious. And we see when Srila Prabhupada came, we see when he led his disciples, the consciousness of the disciples changed. As Srila Prabhupada, I made hippies to happies, and that is the magic that I have done. The king makes the age, the leader is one responsible. If the leader is pious, automatically the age becomes pious. When leaders are properly in control of their senses, it becomes possible for them to imbibe the inspiration of the divinity. So first thing, the leader has to be self-controlled. Only then the populace will be self-controlled. That is, divinity will be able to work through them, through the leaders. Ultimately, the divine monarch acts as God representative in the physical body, and that is what is named as Naradeva. Naradeva means God in the body of a human, in the body of a leader. When the leader is Naradeva, automatically God will act through the leader. Although he always sees himself as merely the servant of, he always sees himself as a servant of God. The leader should always see himself as servant of God. By protecting the citizens, such a self-controlled, divinely inspired king can protect the people and also distribute the spiritual message in a way that his citizens can both appreciate and follow. And so if the leader is self-controlled, is a devotee of the Lord, automatically he will be able to rule. And if he is not controlling his senses, however he will manipulate and exploit the citizens rather than offering them true protection, he will not be able to do so. So if he is not pious, then whatever, however he can manipulate or do, he will not be able to set the religious principles. And the people will follow his example in various ways, becoming as dishonest and exploitative as their king. So if the king is dishonest, fall into the control of his senses, even the people will follow that. Again, the leaders make the people and people make the leader. So ye yathama, not that. What is the verse in Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can please. Yade rachati sreshtas tattadeva taro jana. So as the leader acts, the people follow. And we see in modern days the leaders, His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj comments of the modern leaders. How are they? We see that it is very difficult to become a leader in Kali Yuga. The leadership has become a joke, Prabhu Maharaj was mentioning. People tend to make fun of their leaders. There are cartoons and some sketches made of leader, which was not common in the previous. So you never, these days we see all the politicians in the newspaper, you open, there are cartoons of those politicians. Usually it's an offense to a leader. If this was the thing which would have been done at the time of Bhishma Deva or Maharaj Yudhishthira, his head would have been cut off for making mockery of the leader like that, right? Not to that extent, but this is, you can't just make fun of a king like that. But right now we see there are all this cartoon and different media is always constantly watching the opportunity to make the leaders look ridiculous. So they want to make fun of leaders. I was hearing one of the documentaries in which it was mentioned that 71% of the leaders, especially in India it was mentioned, but this should be common in any part of the world, 71% of the leaders have got criminal charges on them. Those are politicians at this point. And those criminal charges are not of some robbery or something. They are murder cases, rape cases and big scams in billions of dollars. It's not even small scams like 1,000 million or something. Billions dollar scams on them. And there was a law which was presented in the parliament that anyone who has got such a big criminal record should not be given a ticket to appear, ticket for the voting, to stand as in the electoral. But all the leaders came together, and this is the only time it was mentioned, all the politicians came together and voted against it. So this is how the leaders of today are. They are all criminals, most of them. Most of them are criminals. We should be careful making the statements. So otherwise, by the time I'll be out, there will be a big fuss, especially in India, it is like that. You can't just make public announcements like this. But most of them are like this, who have got criminal charges against them. So, as Bhagavatam is mentioning, especially even in the 12th canto, it is mentioned, leaders will be appointed not by their virtues, but by their how criminally advanced they are, or how much money wealthy they are. And so this is Bhagavatam's predictions, and we can see those things happening today. So, and as Maharaj also mentions, so when we examine leadership in all arenas, spiritual and academic, etc., we see that there are perhaps more cheaters than people who are actually qualified. People don't trust their leaders these days. Ironically, the people who would make the best leaders often avoid position of leadership. This is Kali Yuga. People who are most qualified to become leader, they don't want to become leaders, because they don't want to be involved in dirty politics. Because they are saintly, they don't want to get into this, so they don't want to become leaders. Those who are eager for positions often possess the least qualification. Instead of desiring to serve others, they desire to control them. So the qualification of leader is not to serve, but to control these days. So we see there is a necessity of great leaders, especially like Yudhishthira Maharaj, Bhishma Dev, all these were great leaders. After the war of Kurukshetra, Yudhishthira Maharaj was thinking himself responsible for the entire war. He saw that even Duryodhan wasn't bad. He was envious towards them, but he was ruling religiously. He was not so bad. So just to put himself on the throne, so many millions, billions actually, it is mentioned 1.6 billion something people died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, right? 22 Akshonis or something. Somewhere I read, maybe wrong, but there was 1.6 billion people who died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just, and Maharaj, how much was it?
18 Akshonis,
right? 18 Akshonis, yeah. So it was 7 and 11 Akshonis, yeah. First there was supposed to be 9, and then Salya went on to the other side and he got Narayan Shen, so they had 2 Akshonis more than 7-11. Okay. So yeah, 18 Akshonis, how many people were there?
Yeah, 6.5 million and 65 million.
Yes, but it was a big huge number of people who died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and Yudhishthira Maharaj was thinking himself responsible just to for him to become king. At that time, we know from Bhagavatam, Krishna and all the other kings and all the other rishis, sages who were present, they tried to convince Yudhishthira Maharaj, but they were not able to convince Yudhishthira Maharaj at that time. Yudhishthira Maharaj, Krishna and Yudhishthira Maharaj went to Bhishma Dev. And Bhishma Dev gives very nice instruction. It is mentioned that after Bhishma Dev was shot by the arrows, he was lying on the battlefield for 51 days. So he was there for 51 days, and each day Yudhishthira Maharaj and Pandavas were taking instructions from him. So it wasn't like just 18 days after Bhishma Dev left. No, he was there because he was waiting for the right time, Uttarayan, to come so that he can leave his body at the right time. So imagine this personality, Bhishma Dev. He has been shot by arrows, and it is mentioned in Mahabharata that the arrows were so many that there was not even enough space to put two fingers between the arrows. But still he is able to maintain his life. So imagine the power of this personality, Bhishma Dev. It is interesting, even Lord Ram was asked by Yamraj when the pastime was about to end. Yamraj came to meet Lord Ram, and he requested Lord Ram, your time is over, you need to leave if you so desire, of course. But Bhishma Dev could remain in the body. He was given a blessing by his father that he can remain in the body as long as he wanted. So this is the potency of Bhishma Dev. Actually, there was a kind of a joke I heard where Yamraj was fearful because in Lord Ram's time nobody was going to Yamraj's abode. So he was becoming fearful that his job was in danger. If nobody comes to Yamloka, what is he going to do? So he asked Lord Ram, can you please leave so people start coming, because in Ram Rajya nobody goes to, everyone is so pious. So he was feeling dangerous, job security was in danger. He was on bench during Ram Rajya. As we say in IT, on bench means you don't have any work. But again, so Bhishma Dev was so powerful that he could decide the time of his death. Sorry, before that, what were we discussing? So Maharaj Yudhishthir came to meet Bhishma Dev, and he is giving different instructions. He's mentioning that the king's duty is to his people. He should take care of them with no thought of pleasing himself. Exactly what Maharaj was quoting in his book. He should subordinate his own wishes and desire to those of the people. So his desires, his wishes should be subordinate to the wishes of the people. So that is a righteous king, that can be a good leader. And then he should guard them as mothers guard the child. The leader should guard his citizens as the mother guards the child. The leader should know his or his constituents as much as or better than the mother knows their children. So you know, when the child is hungry or cries, mother immediately knows what is required for the child. So leader should be that good that he knows what the citizens require even without citizens speaking to him. Nothing, not even the smallest act, can be accomplished by a single man. He has to have assistance. This is another good point Bhishma Dev is mentioning, that one should not make any decisions by his own. A leader should never take decisions on his own. He should always have a members or committee where he discusses any laws or principles that he wants to apply. And then, depending on the decision of all the committee members, he should apply that law. And he also mentions another thing, that all the committee members should be above the age of 50. Because Bhishma Dev mentions, only after knowledge which is matured, one becomes intelligent. One can use his intelligence only after the knowledge is applied, realized. So all the ministers should be the age of 50 or over, and there should be a committee of people. And we see whether this very much in how Srila Prabhupada established GBC in ISKCON. So it wasn't like one person. Srila Prabhupada saw this and set up GBC so that it's not always one person making decisions, it's always a GBC committee who is making the decision. And then last one which I, there were many instructions, but one of them which I picked up was the spouse, the mother, the father, the sons, the kinsmen, the friends, all will walk away from our bodies at the time of death to go on their own way of work. Only dharma follows the soul. So this was, I thought, was one of the very powerful statements as well, where it is mentioned that one has to follow dharmic principles, one has to perform dharma. Religious principles have to be followed because that is the only one which will follow the soul, which will come with us. Okay, I'll stop here. Are there any comments, corrections, questions? It's a very nice pastime, especially. And another thing I was looking at, all these kings who are mentioned, these are just not the names in different Puranas, different places, because I took a couple of them and I was doing some research where even one line is mentioned in Bhagavatam. And there is a whole pastime, there is a whole story behind these kings. So it's not only that these names are for the sake of there was a son and there was his son. And no, there is a whole, because they are very, if they have appeared in Srimad Bhagavatam, they have got like lot of pastimes or characters. They are like part of the whole Leela actually. It's not by chance they have appeared in Bhagavatam. So when time permits, it's interesting to go through different kings and how powerful they were. And one of the places, I think it was in the last chapter, at the end of last chapter, Srila Prabhupada mentions this, where are all these kings? They were so powerful, where are all of them? So thing to understand is Bhishma Dev, Yudhishthira Maharaj, their power, we can know how powerful were they. But even they had to move on with the influence of time. So what is our qualification? We are not even able to sit or stand properly. Imagine lying on a bed of arrows. So we are so weak, but we are still holding on to things in this material world as if we are going to enjoy them forever. But it is just a fraction of a second that we'll have to build. We will not even have the choice of whether you want to die in the day or night, as Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, day, night, Uttarayana, Dakshinayana, in the full moon, in the fourth moon, all those things are mentioned, right? The pious leaves the body in a certain time and the impious people leave. We'll not even have those choices. So what is the choice that we have? Just to, as Bhishma Dev is mentioning, just to hold on to the dharma. And just by holding on to the religious principles, especially, we are fortunate to have Srimad Bhagavatam, we are fortunate to have Srila Prabhupada given us the process, which is so simple, just chant and be happy. And just chant Hare Krishna and go back to God. So that simple is the process made for us because of what is the verse which defines Pranayalta Ayusha Sabya Kalavasun Yugajan Manda Sumanda Mataya Manda Bhagavad Upadruda. So we are so, our life is so small, we are misguided, unlucky, all the bad qualities, especially after reading 12th canto, first three chapters, you become more realized. I don't think reading the first 11 cantos had affected me as much as reading the 12th canto has affected, because I can see the mirror of myself in it. So that I can now believe the first 11 cantos were, of course, to a certain degree I was, but now I'm becoming more realized, I can say, of because looking at the mirror in 12th canto. So, yeah, it's interesting how Srila Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam is giving you, we have got the scripture, we are very fortunate actually. So, yeah, okay. Any questions, comments? Sorry. Okay, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.